ಸ್ವಾಪದಂಬೋಜತ್
ಪಶ್ಯಾಮಿ ಶರಣಂ ನೃಣಂ
ದಿವ್ಯಥಂ ಮೃತ್ಯು ಸಂಸಾರ ಈಶ್ವರಸ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭಾಗಿಕತ್ ಅನ್ಯತ್ ಅದರ್ ತವ ಯೋ Pada Ambojat, from the lotus feet, Pashyami, I see, Saranam, shelter, Nrinam, for men, Vibhyatam, fearful, Vrityu, of death, Samsarat, and rebirth. Ishvarasya, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Apavarigikat, which give liberation. Translation. For persons fearful of death and rebirth, I see no shelter other than your liberating lotus feet, for you are the Supreme Lord. Translation responsibly. For persons fearful of death and rebirth.
For persons fearful of death and rebirth.
I see no shelter other than your liberating lotus feet.
I see no shelter other than your liberating lotus feet.
For you are the Supreme Lord.
For you are the Supreme Lord.
So these are the prayers of Queen Kunti. She is praying to Lord Krishna to protect her and her Pandava children from the very terrible situation in which she has found herself in. At this point, of course, Lord Krishna, just to recap quickly, Lord Krishna has sent Akrura to Hastinapur, the capital, practically the capital city of the world. Generally, the kings of Hastinapur rule the entire world from that place. And Hastinapur, of course, is Hasti means elephants. And, so Hastinapur was a very, very opulent place, very beautiful and opulent place. There are many, many elephants. As we know, it takes a lot of wealth to maintain one elephant. Imagine if we had one elephant in Melbourne. You know. just to maintain one or two elephants, they practically do not have the opulence. Hastinapur was known for its elephants, many, many elephants. So a very, very opulent place. The kings were very powerful. They were opulent because they dominated the entire world from Hastinapur. And Hastinapur, of course, is which was the capital of the Pandavas eventually, is the present Indraprastha, right, which is part of New Delhi, which Srila Prabhupada describes in the Krishna book. So there the Queen Kunti and her sons, the five Pandavas, they were under the protection, so-called protection, of Dhritarashtra. Now, Dhritarashtra was supposed to be ruling the kingdom just long enough so that the Pandavas, who were the rightful heirs to the throne of Hastinapur, to be emperors of the entire world, just long enough so that they could grow up, be trained up, and then he was to hand over the kingdom to them. Now, he didn't do that. He decided that he was jealous of the Pandavas, he and his sons, and he decided that he would keep the kingdom himself, although it was not meant to be his. he was actually Dhritarashtra was actually known as the son of the Chitravirya. But factually, he wasn't the son of Vichitravirya, for Vichitravirya could not bear a child. And in those days, there was a custom that if the father, if the, you know, man could not bear a child, then his brother could bear a child, you know, in his wife's womb, and then he would claim that son. So actually, Dhritarashtra was the son of Vyasadeva. so he was not actually. But later on, we see that Akrura addresses him sarcastically as, you know, a son of Chitravirya. But actually, he wasn't. And in the same way, he sarcastically addresses him as the king. But actually, he wasn't. You know, he was falsely. so he was blind, of course, both materially and spiritually, Dhritarashtra. And his sons were very sinful. They were rogues, headed by Duryodhana. Now, Dhritarashtra, he had the guidance or the counsel from such personalities as Bhishma and Vidura, who were great devotees, great statesmen, very wonderful advisors. You know, you could not get better advisors than Bhishma and Vidura, but he did not take their advice. Instead, he took the advice of personalities who were unqualified. And you know, had deceitful purposes in mind. So he took advice from personalities like Karna and Sukuni, and also from his sons. So this whole pastime here is very instructive. Mahatma, you know the Mahabharata, right? Yeah. So you know, this pastime is very instructive about taking advice from the wrong people, and we see that the whole battle of Kurukshetra resulted. If Dhritarashtra could have actually just taken advice from any of the persons who were giving him advice. He's being given advice by Bhishma, Vidura, and many others like that. Also here, Krishna sent Akrura, you know, out of friendship, so that Akrura would give advice on behalf of Krishna himself. So much opportunity. So it's said that, you know, there are three different types of intelligence. There is first class intelligence, where a person can learn just by hearing. That is their experience. Hearing is enough. They hear good advice, they accept that good advice, and they save themselves a huge amount of trouble in this material world. That's first class intelligence. Second class intelligence, they will hear good advice, but they have to experience for themselves in order to take that advice seriously. When I was a little child, I was very young, I was probably only about 7 or something. I don't know why, but I was, everyone had gone out, and I was mining a very young child who was about 2. You know, when I think back about it, it wasn't very good. we had a like a briquette heater, and it had a glass pane in the front, so when it was burning, it used to glow bright yellow and orange, so it was very colourful. So this little girl, you know, she kept wanting to crawl up and touch it, you know, didn't like it, because they don't touch, they sort of lean on things, you know, which would have just peeled the skin off both of their hands. And I was terrified, you know, I just, no matter, you know, I could not explain to her, you just, you know, don't touch. And she wouldn't listen, of course, she was too. She was incapable. So, I actually allowed her to touch it. And as soon as she touched it, I pulled her hand away. But it was just for a second, and it was enough for her to feel the heat. And she never touched it again. I didn't have to tell her after that. She wouldn't go near it. That was it. She learned. So she had second class intelligence, which is pretty good for a 2-year-old. You know, that's pretty good. So I was hoping she didn't have third class intelligence. Third class intelligence, they just keep going back, even though they get burnt, they just go back into that fire and they burn themselves again and again and again. So that is not wanted. So here Dhritarashtra, he was, you know, had so much good instruction, but he just did not have that first class intelligence, could not accept it, and ultimately he had to lose everything, as we see, as the, you know, story of the Mahabharata, you know, the Krishna's pastimes gradually pan out, we see that he lost everything. All his 100 sons, he lost the kingdom, he lost all his relatives, he lost his wealth, he lost everything. And then at that stage he understood. But the third class intelligent, even after losing everything like that, they just repeated it. Therefore you see sometimes some people, you know, they perhaps, you know, they hear, you break the law, you go to jail. And they break the law and they go to jail. And then they get out of jail and they break the law again and they go back in jail, in and out, like that. It's third class. They never really learn. They're not really intelligent at all. It's more like, you know, sort of ass-like mentality. So, you know, this is the scene. So Dhritarashtra, you know, he was given so much advice, you know, you while you're looking after the Pandavas, look after them equally as you would your own sons, because, you know, there were rumors that he was trying to kill them, which he was. At this stage he'd already tried to poison them. And different things, tried to kill them, because he was thinking, you know, to get the kingdom, if I can, you know, kill these Pandavas while they're young, then it'd be, you know, a lot easier than trying to kill them when they're older. So you can see the, you know, how hearing, just getting this bad advice, not being able to take good advice, and even worse, listening to bad advice. This is the strange thing, that sometimes people like that, they you know, no matter what happens, they cannot take good advice. They hear some bad advice and they soak it up like a sponge. And they just take it as the gospel truth. So, you know, this is Dhritarashtra's situation. You know, it's humorous, but this is actually the common state of affairs at the moment, Kali Yuga. This is actually, everyone does this. At this time, Dhritarashtra was singled out as, you know, but actually now everyone does this. Everyone cannot listen to good advice. Everyone takes bad advice. So, he was asked to treat the pandavas equally, but he could not. So, and he was very jealous. Srila Prabhupada describes it. Jealousy means that if someone has something for their enjoyment, and if a person is jealous, they do not want them to have that to enjoy. It's the mentality of, again, materialistic people. Some people are like that. They just go through their life, and even to their dearest relatives. Sometimes you see even husband and wife, you know, that sometimes the wife or the husband, due to, you know, bad training as a child and, you know, being brought up and these impurities in the heart, that even the husband or the wife, they will not let the other partner enjoy. If they see, or sometimes a grandmother, you know, or a parent, sometimes a parent, they cannot stand to see that my child is enjoying. You know, sometimes a parent, when they were young, you know, they were treated very harshly, they had to do everything hard, you know, and they see their child has it easy, and they think, no. You know, and they become jealous of their own children. You know. So, these things here we see in Dhritarasa, you know, many, all the qualities of the average person in this day and age. Jealousy, you know, foolishness, third class intelligence. Like that. It's very, very commonplace now. This is just, you know, even the professors in the colleges, the leaders, the political leaders, many of the clergy, the leaders, the idols, everyone that people look up to, and the common person, these are their qualities. This is the state of affairs. So, Queen Kunti, of course, being very, very pious, she was understanding that only Krishna could actually protect her from, you know, this very, very disastrous, terrible situation. She didn't think, I will also become sinful. You know, that's what happens. Srila Prabhupada explains that for an impious person, when they get into difficulty, they become more sinful. And for a pious person, when they get into difficulty, they turn to the Supreme Lord. This is the difference. So, you know, here we have to understand that we should follow the example of Queen Kunti. Now, for the average person who was reading this Srila Bhagavatam, they'd probably be thinking Dhritarashtra is the one to follow and Queen Kunti is some fool. That's what people would think. But actually it's Queen Kunti who has the proper intelligence. So... She is understanding that, you know, if there is some difficulty, you know, perhaps due to providence, for some reason, for the Lord's will, whether it's a devotee, they see it as the Lord's will, or, you know, whether they think that it is, you know, due to some previous karma, they're getting the reaction now. Certain situations come about and therefore there is some suffering condition. Now an intelligent person thinks, then why, you know, why produce another cycle of suffering in my next life? I am suffering now. And sometimes we see this, you know, with again, you know, relationships. Sometimes, you know, the man will cheat on the woman will cheat on a man, so the other person will think, well, I'll go and cheat on them. See? So, you know, we sometimes get into that situation because of past, previous activities, that therefore we suffer. And then if we again do a similar act, then we will suffer in a similar way in the next life. So sometimes we have to just accept that reaction and not exacerbate the suffering or continue it into the next life by, you know, committing sinful activities. Another interesting point here, of course, is that sometimes people think that if they're going to commit sinful activities in order to fix a problem, that if they do it jointly with other people, that there'll be, you know, they're somehow immune from a reaction. We saw this in, you know, world wars, like the Second World War. You see that, you know, in Hitler's regime, so ordinary men and women, and then there is war, and they are seeing, well, you know, everyone is just murdering, you know, innocent people. That's what everyone is doing. There is a sanction of the government. The whole country is doing that. So if I do it, what is the harm? As, you know, people think like that. You know, so many thousands of them, you know, got caught up in, and we see with a lot of wars like that. You know, even to this very day, they just see, well, the whole neighborhood, they're all, you know, there's some ethnic cleansing going on. You know, everyone's getting their machetes and they're chopping up this one and chopping up that one, or there's gang warfare, you know, pop, pop, you know, this one's getting, you know, blown away. Everyone is doing it. If I do it, you know, so people sometimes think that, you know, if you're doing sinful activity, but everyone else is doing it, then, you know, what is the blame? But what they don't consider is that you suffer your karma alone. And when it comes time to accept the karmic reaction, what we have done individually counts. Whether we did it with other people, or, influenced by other, we did it. We committed sinful activity, and therefore we will suffer that result. Sometimes, in a family situation, you see that, you know, perhaps the husband, in order to maintain the wife and the children, you know, or you know, vice versa, you know, that we see there's this court case going on at the moment with Mothbell or something. He's an underworld criminal who, you know, killed the opposition, and so now he's getting tried for murder. But he took off when he was on some drug offence, and he knew that also a murder case was coming, so he took off and he escaped. He's gone overseas with his millions of dollars. But his sister-in-law, I think it was, put up her house as a surety for bail. So, you know, but of course she perjured herself, because it wasn't really her house, it was a family trust. So now she faces perjury, which is a jail sentence. And on top of that, she's told various lies in court, trying to help out her brother-in-law, but he's gone, but she will suffer. The judge is not going to say, oh, you did it for your brother-in-law. No, I can understand that, yeah. No, you're right, off you go. He's not going to say that. See? But sometimes you see family members, they will, you know, commit all sorts of sinful activities for the other family members. But when it comes time to read their karma, the people they're committing sinful activity for, you know, it's not them who will suffer, it's the person who committed the sinful activity. So someone may commit sinful activity and all the relatives are enjoying the results. But if you tell them that you will suffer in this way for so many lifetimes for that activity, not your relatives, would they be doing it? But people don't consider that. So these are all the different foolish mentalities that are there, found in this pastime. And Dhritarashtra, now his basic ignorance is the root cause of all other suffering, and it just follows this just tragic tale of suffering and destruction based on this so-called king's ignorance. And what is that ignorance? Is that he is identifying himself as the body. That is as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, when he first begins to instruct Arjuna, his first instruction is that Arjuna, you are speaking learned words, you're speaking like a very intelligent person, but actually those who are actually intelligent, they don't speak like that. They don't lament for the body. See, they understand that they are not the body. Whether they are in the living condition or the dead condition, doesn't matter. The spirit soul, the individual person, is not the body. This is knowledge. This is the elementary platform of knowledge on which spiritual life expands. Without that, there is no question of spiritual life. So all these people who profess that they're doing this spiritual thing and that spiritual thing, and have, you know, this misconception that they are the body. You know, some people are playing music, some people are taking drugs, you know, some people are doing this, and all thinking it is spiritual, but they have no idea that they are not the body, they are not the mind, therefore they do not have the very elementary basis of knowledge by which spiritual life expands from. From this platform, thinking I am the body, then the next step is that we think that all those related to my body, they are my relatives. Alright? So I think I am this body, these are my children, this is my wife, this is my husband. The Srila Prabhupada says in a humorous way, there are so many women all over the planet, and yet, you know, we have a conception that this one is mine, you know. It's when you think about marriage in that sense, it's a strange, you know, conception. Of course, marriage is necessary because it keeps society, you know, running properly. But we have to be careful not to buy into the illusion of, you know, bodily identifications. You know, as devotees, we do everything which keeps our life wholesome for Krishna consciousness, but we have to be very careful not to buy into the illusory mentality that, you know, those who are ignorant will, you know, accept as well. These are my children, this is my wife, this is my husband. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada points out that all the wars on this planet, they're all being fought because people are thinking they are the body, and these are my relatives. Right? So they're all, you know, that is. And the next step, as that same illusion expands a little further, they're thinking, I am this body, these are my relatives, and we were born in this country, this piece of land, this is worshipable land. Therefore, we will fight will sacrifice their life. You see that, you know, people sacrificing their lives for their relatives, their land. And it's all illusion. It's all foolishness. But the whole world, you know, how many wars are going on at this very present moment? How many billions of dollars are being pumped into wars to fight on this principle? These are my relatives. This is our land. This land is worth all. We will not live anywhere else. There's so many places you can live in this world. There's so many beautiful places. Mm-hmm. No, we will live here. Only. This is the promised land, the sacred land. This land is holy. You know, we have buried our ancestors here. Their bodies are in the ground. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for so much, all these different types of illusion, billions and billions of dollars. Perhaps the majority of the wealth of this world is being pumped into this illusion. And if this illusion was not there, if people would take good instruction, again, we see all these people, you know, they had, like, you have the big nations. These people go to university, spend all their life, they've got diplomas and certificates all over their walls and their offices. They hold these massive big posts. They get these huge salaries. Even if they hold that post for a few months and they retire, they pay it out for the rest of their life. Because, you know, they're lauded as these great leaders and great intelligent persons. And yet, their mentality is no better than the ass. Because that is the ass mentality. The ass thinks it's an ass. Okay? An ass thinks it's an ass. It thinks, yes, a dog thinks it's a dog. And those things related, you know, the relatives. A human being is supposed to be on the level where they have some knowledge, religious principles, and that distinguishes them, that knowledge, and as I said, knowledge that we're not this body, that is the very beginning. That is it is not elevated knowledge, it's just common knowledge. It should be there from, you know, 5 years old, right? A 5 year old child in a properly run society, you tell them, you're not that body. When did you understand you're not that body?
Yeah.
Five?
Yeah.
Four or five? I know my daughters, you know, they're four or five, and you explain to them, there's a spirit soul in your heart, lives forever, there's a body, you're not that body, you're like, you know, you go into different bodies. You explain that to a 4 or 5 year old, they will understand.
The first year of primary school in Gurukul, we asked by the teacher, when do you think you'll leave this body? You know, one kid said, oh, I think I'll be about 80 or something, and another kid said something else, and I said, I could leave this body in 5 minutes. I could walk out on the road tomorrow and get hit by a bus, you know, because I'd already learned this, obviously.
Yeah, that's a fact.
5 years old.
Yeah, that's right. See? And here, you know, so this is the beginning that a 5 year old child can, a 4 or 5 year old child. Here are these big, you know, politicians and advisors, and their mentality is no better than an ass. Therefore, you know, if you put a whole lot of cats and dogs together, what do? They fight. So what do we see in this world? A whole bunch of cats and dogs and asses fighting. Right? That's the result. If they could accept good instruction, even the very elementary beginning instruction, they would understand, well, you know, we're not this body, you know, there's an illusion, this land is not, you know, sacred. You know, in this way, they would have no cause. You know, that detachment would be there, and there would be no jealousy and envy, the greed, the lust, and there would be a sense of duty. Because, you know, when a person understands that they're not this body, they think, well, okay, I'm not this body, I'm the spirit soul. I've come into this body as a result of my previous activities. Therefore, I'll be very careful, you know, to execute my duties very nicely in this life so that, you know, I will be elevated somehow or another in my next life. That is the natural consciousness of people who understand that they are spirit soul. Therefore, you find people are very careful, you know, to they don't just transgress religious or social or moral principles, you know, just like that. Because people think this life is the all in all, I am this body, when I'm dead, I'm dead. Therefore, they do whatever they want because they think, you know, eat, drink and be merry for tomorrow you die. That is the philosophy of the world. You know? And then, you know, if they think, well, you know, perhaps I believe in God, so then, you know, if somehow at the last stage of my life, if I just, you know, call out to God, he will forgive me, you know, he will suffer. He will accept all my sinful reactions at that. So I can sin, and at the last moment I just give to him. Or, you know, some of them actually think by sinful activities they actually go to heaven and they're rewarded with, like, you know, they get 80 sort of beautiful virgin girls and, you know, all this sort of crazy stuff. So if I'm, you know, if I kill as many people as I can, I'll be rewarded in heaven. So in the name of religious life, you know, because there's no knowledge of religion, you know, actually, you know, what goes in the name of religion is some of the most sinful activities that there are these days. So there is no knowledge, not even elementary knowledge, and therefore the world is in a... this same situation that happened with Dhritarashtra for the same reason. See, 5,000 years ago, Dhritarashtra could not accept good advice, he could not accept even elementary knowledge, and therefore so much problems. And today, same situation, same, cannot accept, you know, elementary knowledge, you are not this body, you know, and therefore this is the source of all other illusions. Like this, same problem, same wars, same causes. And Queen Kunti here, she is actually giving the real solution to all the world problems then and to all the world problems now. Same solution in this one verse. Very, very powerful. And she says that for persons fearful of death and rebirth, I see no shelter other than your liberating lotus feet, for you are the Supreme Lord. So, of course, Queen Kunti recognizes her, you know, her spiritual understanding is very, very elevated because she recognizes there is a Supreme Lord. That we are the eternal servants of the Lord, spirit souls, and that Krishna is that Supreme Lord. So even more elevated knowledge. But we talk about religious principles, but if people cannot even understand themselves, how can they claim to know God? Mm-hmm. Right? And if they do not know God, how can they claim to follow religious principles? A person cannot even understand themselves. They have the mentality of an ass. Right? And yet they're claiming to be the knowers of God. They don't know that they're not this body, they're a spirit soul. And they're claiming to understand the Supreme Spirit Soul. How can you do that? That's like someone who's in primary school who, you know, cannot understand the first statements of mathematics and saying, yes, but I know quantum physics. I cannot add two and two, but, you know, it doesn't make sense. If you cannot add two and two, you probably, you know, if you don't know yourself, how can you know the Supreme Self? And if you don't know God, how can you know religious principles? So, you know, what goes on, unless a person knows that they are a spirit soul, really you have to question their religious principles as being, you know, elementary at best. But certainly not, you know, they would not have a proper scope or understanding of religious principles. First, we must understand ourselves. We are a spirit soul, eternal servant of Krishna. That is the beginning. That helps us to then understand the Lord, because we have, you know, qualities which are just, you know, same qualities, but in minute. So if we can understand ourselves, we are a person, eternal person, that helps us to understand, yes, Krishna, or God, is an eternal person. So like that, if we can understand our own spiritual nature, we can understand the Supreme Lord. And if we understand the supreme position of Ishvara, the Supreme Lord, then we can understand religious principles, and we can execute our duty very nicely and become totally fearless of birth and death by taking shelter of the Supreme Lord and his instructions in the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and not taking shelter of foolish, ass-like, you know, human beings with all their so-called knowledge, which is simply illusion, and taking shelter of so much sinful activity, illusion, and ignorance. But I'll leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments.
I have one comment, and that is, when they don't know, like, you know, terrorists, suicide bombers, what they do, they are told, if you kill 500 people, your family will get 500 times into so much reward. So they just go, take the bomb, kill themselves, and kill 500 people. Mm-hmm. Because they think that their family is everything.
That's, yes.
So they are doing such terrible
yes.
things. There is a terrorist activity going on in this whole world. Suicide bombers, they think they will, their family will get so much money, so they can do any heinous crime and get away from death. But Krishna is punishing them. First they are doing suicide, and they are not understanding anything, and they are killing so many innocent people. If you throw a bomb or in the bus, 100 people gone. So they are such a heinous crime.
They have no concept at all that they are spiritual. And look at the people, that's a very good point you're saying. Look at the people generally they're killing. Many of the people who get killed these days are children,
women,
elderly people, you know. The people go out shopping and they blow them to smithereens.
Severe punishment.
You know, how can that act of... such violence, to inflict such terror and violence upon persons who are defenseless. They're unarmed, they're not even looking for trouble, they're just going out buying some apples or going to school, and they think that by this activity that they will go to heaven.
There's another thing, they think that they will get heaven by killing innocent people in such a barbaric way.
So, you know, violence is there in the ultimately there was a battle of Kurukshetra, because Krishna, he understood that. So for instance, Dhritarashtra, Krishna understood that he was not fit to rule. And as we see, that in cahoots with his sons, they were trying to murder these five children. So they were the rightful heirs, and he was trying to murder them out of jealousy. Now, had they grown up and looked after the kingdom, they would have looked after him anyway. He would have been like one of the wealthiest, most powerful persons on the planet, under the protection of the most wonderful emperors, you know, the world could ever see. But that wasn't good enough. Instead, let me murder these innocent children who only have my, you know, welfare at heart, and I will take a kingdom which I would enjoy anyway. So you know, how is such a person fit to rule the citizens of the world? So therefore, you know, in that circumstance, the Pandavas, of course, they said that they were so gracious. They said, "Okay, you have the kingdom. Give us a village each. Give us one village each. You've taken our the entire world of us. Give us one village each." Yudhan said, "I won't give you so much land you can stick a pin into." Right, you see here, Arjun, to the very last moment, he could not. He was a non-violent by nature. The thought of violence, even he was a Kshatriya, but the thought of violence, you know, even these people were sinful, tried to murder him. He still, he would rather just lose everything. And Krishna said no, and Krishna incited him. "I want you to fight and kill." So sometimes, you know, violence is there, but it is sanctioned by God, and it is very, you know, we have to notice here that in the case of Arjun, that even though he was a military man, his reluctance to kill even sinful people is the nature of, you know, persons who are truly righteous.
Compassion.
Compassion. But when people have this, you know, they will inflict violence on innocent people who have done no wrong. At the slightest provocation, then such persons have to be removed one way or another. That's a fact. And in that case, then violence may be necessary.